Brian Sykes, my guest for the remainder of this hour, will also be taking your phone calls. His book, Bigfoot, Yeti, and the Last Neanderthal, A Geneticist's Search for Modern Ape Man. Brian, I know you said in the last hour that you're wrapped up with this research. This isn't something you're really going on with, except for the ape woman study that you're a little bit more involved in. But what's your opinion about the future of Bigfoot and Yeti Sasquatch research?
Well, let me qualify that I finish with it completely. I do get letters. I had one the other day, funny enough, from somewhere not very far from you in Michigan, with a man who wrote to me with a very articulate account of an experience that he'd had. And he was in the forest, there were crashing sounds, he saw something, and so on and so forth. He smelt something, that's another very familiar story. And so if people do find something that is tremendously good provenance, maybe even a body or something like that, then I'm still very happy to test it. My lab still knows how to do it, so long as I can cover the cost somehow or other. So those are the samples that I'm... That's the interest which I still have. But as a major project, I think I've done enough. The future, well, if for nothing else, the techniques which my colleagues and I have pioneered, I guess, in this field are what has been lacking. That is to say, a method of identifying an anomalous primate, a Yeti or a Bigfoot, and showing what species it is in such a way that the scientific community will accept it. And that there hasn't been that. There's been lots of other descriptions, but none passes the test of universal acceptance. So I hope, before we get on to the, always get asked this question, do you believe that exists? I hope in the future that people will reshape the way they're doing their research and try and get hold of hares. Once they've done that, the rest is just a question of money.
All right. Do you believe, have you formed any opinion after doing all the research you've done, hearing all the stories you've heard and visiting the locations you've been to, do you believe that there is a cryptid like Bigfoot that still exists out there?
I thought, yes. Well, it was bound to come, wasn't it, that question?
Of course.
But fortunately, I was able to approach the project without having to form an opinion. So after I've spoken to so many people, and I still think it's worthwhile looking. Obviously, you can't have, if you find some samples and that's not a Bigfoot or it's something like a bear or something like that, that's not no proof at all that they don't exist. So absence of proof is never going to be proof of absence. That's obvious, really. So the question is it worthwhile? Are the stories good ones? Is the evidence good, the sightings and so forth? And I still think that I've talked to so many people who've had very clear sightings and that I think they have seen something, really. I think it's worth, always thought it's worth pursuing to find out what they were. And I suppose the people that impressed me most, really, are the ones who I met along the way that had never made any sort of show of they hadn't been committed Bigfootologists. They'd just regular people who'd seen something and they told me what it was. They didn't want to make a fuss about it. They had nothing to gain and that sort of thing. And those are the people that convinced me that it was still worth carrying on the search, yes, if I can answer it like that, without saying, what do I believe? Because as a scientist, of course, my beliefs don't really matter. It's the evidence which I'm after.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, phone lines are open. You can call in and talk with us about your thoughts on the subject, questions for our guests, your own encounter stories. And if you'd like to email me, you could do that at dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. And I'll try to use some of your questions throughout the remainder of this hour. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming your way. I'm the best in overnight talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. Got some good news for those of you single looking to find somebody to mingle with and share a lifetime of adventure. Well, George Norrie has your answer. ParanormalDate.com, approaching 40,000 members right now. Again, that's 40,000 opportunities to meet the love of your life or your new best friend. If you're interested in the strange, the supernatural, and all the fringe elements you hear here on Coast to Coast AM, then I encourage you, go check it out for yourself. ParanormalDate.com. Be one of the 40,000 members. You never know. You may have a new adventuring partner to go out Bigfooting with this summer. Just go check out ParanormalDate.com. Our guest this evening, as we continue talking about Bigfoot, is Brian Sykes, and his book, Bigfoot, Yeti, and the Last Neanderthal, A Geneticist's Search for Modern Ape Man, is available. And we have links to that up at coasttocoastam.com, so go check that out. We have open phone lines. If you have questions, stories, you have concerns, things that you'd like to talk with our guest about, this is your chance to join us. All right, Brian, are you ready for a few phone calls?
Well, as ready as I'll ever be.
All right, let's go to first-time caller line, Jordan in Seattle. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Brian.
Hello, Jordan.
Hi. I'm an avid Bigfoot believer, though I have never actually seen any proof. But I just recently moved to Seattle. Very excited to be here because this is sort of ground zero for all the Bigfoot sightings in the U.S. But I'm just wondering, you know, how likely is it that there's enough Bigfoot creatures that might still exist that there's sightings in 49 of the 50 states, just not in Hawaii? It seems like if there really was that many sightings and those sightings were real, or a good element of them, a good number of them, that would be a lot of creatures that were hidden. What are your thoughts on that? I'm just curious.
Well, you're certainly correct. As Bigfoot or something like that has been seen in all the states. In fact, in every country in the world, there are stories of large creatures in the forest. I've traveled to many parts of the world where they have these stories. And they are so frequent, and they are so so many reports from good witnesses in good light and so forth and so on, that it is hard to believe, if they really were there in moderately large numbers, that we haven't yet got better evidence than we have.
Right. So does that just lend to the idea that maybe it's some sort of a psychological trick of the mind, that, you know, people see something and interpret it as that, and it's just more of a, like, a, not a mass hallucination, but sort of people feed off of each other's mistakes, in a sense?
Well, I think one very good Bigfooter from Seattle, in fact, Rettman Mullis, explained to me that he's a psychologist as well. He explained to me the phenomenon of pareidolia, it's called. And that is a very highly evolved sense that we have, or ability that we have, to make sense of any image that we see. So, for example, you see the man in the moon, or you see images of even paintings. They're not really there, are they? They're just, the mind is making, from a few splashes of color on the sheet, and making an image that means something. And although one tends to say, well, that, you know, you're just imagining it, I think that the evolutionary advantage of the mind being able to do that is tremendous, because we lived for much of our history in a very dangerous world full of predators. And a friend put this very well to me, this phenomenon of pareidolia. And it's a good thing, because, as he said, it's better to mistake a tree for a leopard than a leopard for a tree. So that's a good thing. So I think people can form an image of something which is not truly there. Now, that's not going to explain everything. It certainly doesn't explain rocks hurled through the air or smells or sounds and that sort of thing. It's something I think that Bigfooters are aware of and take precautions not to be deceived by it.
Thank you, Jordan. We appreciate the call. Let's go west of the Rockies. David in Fairbanks, Alaska, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling in.
Hello, David.
Hello, sir. I just had a question for you. On my dad's side, they're upstate New York. On his father's side is Irish. And then on my dad's mother's side is Ogallala Lakota. And I got to profound opportunity to work with many First Nations peoples in North Dakota. And I got to hear a lot of first accounts of First Nations and their experiences with Bigfoot. And I know that we have all these sightings and all the science and whatnot, but I think the most profound proof, the most profound experience that we could ever put pen to paper is to talk to First Nations peoples and get their thoughts and their experiences on Bigfoot. And I think it's an awesome thing. But I'm sure you have. I just wanted to put that in there, and I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Well, if you want me to comment, that's certainly true. And I was in touch with Native American tribes in Washington State, and certainly went to see them and heard their stories, and they were very convincing. And there were some samples as well, but not very many to test. I mean, the question, there's so many interesting aspects to this. I mean, one could imagine that people do collect stories of experiences and leave it at that. It's a very interesting phenomenon. And not bother to do any testing to try and prove something. And I think quite a lot of people don't really want to prove the existence of it. And I just thought it would be, for my techniques that I had available as a scientist, that it was something that could be done. I mean, it's an open question of whether one should do it, but I did. And that doesn't mean to say that the stories don't have their own validity. And my word, they're good stories as well.
Have you been on active Bigfoot investigations, or was it always an after-the-fact or let's-go-visit-where-famous-sighting took place type of investigation?
Oh, well, both, really. I mean, I had, for example, to give you one example, I found a very interesting example indeed. I was in a sample donor contacted me and told me about sightings of over many years up in Marble Mount, which is in Washington State, northern Washington State, northern Cascades. So I went up there with her. Her name is Laurie Simmons, and she was telling me about her father, who lived in the forest for many years and became close to a group of Sasquatch. And she told me that there was one of these creatures that lived underneath a particular tree. And so I went along with her. She showed me the tree, and there's another witness as well. She said that the creature lived under the tree and that she could communicate with it by stamping on the ground. And she said, right, I'll show you. So I went with an open mind, and she stamped on the ground, and she said that the creature would normally, she called it the big guy, would normally respond by knocking against the side of the cave or the tree root, so you heard a definite knock, that's what she said. And we went along there, and sure enough, I heard a knock, three knocks. We all heard it, and it was a very chilling experience. That there really did seem to be something living under that tree. Now, to get the full story, you'll need to buy the book, but it was certainly a very fascinating experience, because at that moment I sort of became convinced that there was in fact a Sasquatch living under the tree, and it was almost as if I could then adopt the mindset, if you like to use that word, of a cryptozoologist, that there was something under there, and I was just all I needed to do was to identify it.
Well, let me help you try to move one of your books. Too. Right. Let me try to help you move one of the books by telling us, instead of just all you have to go read the story, flesh this one out for us. I mean, you've given us enough bait on the other points. Give me something on this one. I mean, what did you end up finding out in this case particularly?
I went back again. I spent a week there with Laurie, and we heard the creature making a huge amount of noise, really rowdy, knockings and. I didn't hear them, but at certain times they growling, and she was absolutely terrified. And I was pretty apprehensive, I must say. And then I was prepared to, well, I was prepared for a large creature coming. I'm not saying it was a Sasquatch, but it was might have been a bear, for example, just coming out of hibernation. So potentially a dangerous situation. In the end, we set up hare traps around the site and so forth and so on, and left apples out for the creature, which always disappeared overnight. So quite a lot of convincing evidence, or at least evidence, but we never found a hare that matched an anomalous primate. I think there were some alternative explanations to the sound, but again, I don't want to spoil the book.
All right. Have you done any nighttime investigations, or do you believe that there is a good time that's best to try to find something like this?
Well, I set out a lot of hare traps. I sort of developed a method of making a hare trap so I could leave it around a Bigfoot site overnight. That's with sort of gorilla tape, the sticky side out, very, very adhesive. Pick up anything, and I got a range of hares like that. So, but I didn't participate, though. I talked to lots of people who did go out at night with cameras and infrared cameras and this and that sort of thing, image intensifiers, and talked to a lot of those, and they had some terrifying experiences to recount of creatures that they couldn't see them because the headgear wasn't working properly. They could feel them. Sometimes this creature would come right up to them, and they could feel their breath. So terrifying. But again, I didn't do that myself. I just heard stories about it. Was told.
Do you feel, you know? It sounds like you have a very skeptical nature towards this. Do you think that?
Well, what does that mean, Dave? What
nullifies the science behind it? Well, you know, I understand we all should be more skeptical. You don't want to just buy into the belief that because so many people are seeing things and perhaps misidentifying.
Like there's programs on the television every week.
Right.
Called Finding Bigfoot, in my opinion. That's the last thing they want to do. So you're always ending up with a question mark. It's a form of entertainment, but it's getting absolutely nowhere towards answering what is a question that everyone is interested in. Are there these creatures, are they our ancient ancestors, or what are they that are wandering around? But none of these shows will ever get anywhere near the truth because they don't really try.
All right, Brian Sykes, our guest. Your calls continue. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Tonight we're having a conversation with Brian Sykes, and he is the author of Bigfoot, Yeti, and the Last Neanderthal, a geneticist's search for modern ape man. Brian, I have to ask you a glaring question that I know once the listeners go check out the link on Amazon and look into this information, one question is going to come back at me, and I know I'm going to be haunted by it if I don't ask you on air. Is it an unfortunate publisher name that you're working with? Because the publisher it's listing here is Disinformation Books. Do you feel that might slight the work that you're doing by having that as the name of your publisher?
I think you have to blame the agent. I mean, I believe it's a reputable publisher. My UK publisher, Odder and Stoughton, arranged this American publication. I suppose I was a little concerned when I saw it, but I don't think anyone's going to be any doubt if they read the book that it's a serious attempt to do some good work.
Wildcard Line 1, Farlin in Ada, Oklahoma. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi. I was just going to share a little something with you from the perspective of a Bigfoot enthusiast.
Okay.
I would ask a question. I'm just an average guy, and I was camped out in Missouri back in the early 90s, and I'm now 56 years old. I was camped with my family, and before it started getting dark, the campground host came by our campsite, asked us if everything was okay, and then just before he left, he said, "Well, keep an eye out for Bigfoot." And I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "Keep an eye out for Bigfoot." And I said, "Oh, I think we'll be okay." I was very sarcastic. He said, "Hey, I'm just letting you know, people have been seeing him around here." And after he drove off, I looked at my wife. I said, "Man, that guy's crazy. He's telling me to look out for Bigfoot." And then a few years after that, I had my own encounter, and I've just been intrigued ever since. And to the point that I get to help out now with a Bigfoot festival and a Bigfoot conference every year in eastern Oklahoma. And I'm curious to know, it just seems like the scientific method maybe could be updated since computers and a lot of other things have been invented since the method itself was written out. But it just seems like the scientific method, even with all the new techniques, is still going to require a body on a slab. And I just cringe to think that it's going to be a body acquired by someone killing a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And because I feel they are people. And I love that your book title includes Neanderthal in it, because I love to point out to people that the Neanderthal were people, but they weren't exactly humans like us. And I love to point out that we have Neanderthal DNA in our own DNA, and it's not because they were ever our ancestors. And so my question is, if an actual bone or a piece of bone were discovered, and it is actually a Sasquatch bone, the universe knows that it is. And so this bone is analyzed, and a DNA sample is obtained from it, and the sample actually is human, or at least part human. What is going to keep the science community from saying, "Oh, what a pity, it's been contaminated"?
Yes. Well, a good question. I mean, first of all, on the question of our own Neanderthal DNA, we do have a bit of it, 2-3%, which is actually from Neanderthal ancestors, because we hybridized with them many, many thousands of years ago. I agree that Sasquatch should be protected. In fact, it's rather a semantic point, but if we can hybridize with Neanderthals, then we are actually, in one definition, the same species. So, but that's not what we're talking about. The scientific advances, I mean, the one that I use in the book is a scientific advance that's happened over the last 10 years, really, and pioneered by forensic use of DNA. And as I said before, I think that is the way forward. It works on hair. Bones, it's a little bit more difficult in that the decontamination process to make sure you're not contaminating a sample is a little more difficult. But if you found a Sasquatch bone and the sequence was sufficiently different, let's say it was like a Neanderthal, for example, then that would be very easy to find. The only difficulty is if it's so like a modern human or is a modern human, is to discount the possibility that it was contaminated by a modern human, either in the lab or when it was in the field.
All right, we need to take our final break. We'll come back. We'll continue with your calls and our guest, Brian Sykes, right after this. If you like what you hear on Coast to Coast AM and wish you could just get more. Well, I have some good news for you. You can. BeyondBelief.com. That's George Norrie's TV series. You can check it out. 99 cents for the first month. BeyondBelief.com. You'll find great interviews there, more information, more in depth, and you get a chance to see more of the content that you hear on Coast to Coast AM. And if you love the radio and you want to continue hearing topics like this, you can join me, Dave Schrader, Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight Central Time. And you can listen to our live stream off darknessradio.com as we come from our home here at the Twin Cities News Talk Station, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM in Minneapolis, St. Paul. You can stream the show live from our website and continue listening, because as soon as we wrap up at midnight, George Norrie and Coast to Coast AM continues your journey into the strange. We talk about ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, psychic phenomena, monsters, myths, legends, and the creepiest of true crime. So check out darknessradio.com for more information. We're wrapping up our conversation with Brian Sykes. We've got more of your calls. Wildcard Line 2, Mike in West Palm Beach, Florida. Welcome to the show. What's your question for our guest? Good.
Hey, hello, everybody. Hypothetical situation. I capture a Bigfoot, and I want to sell it on the market. I'm assuming there's all the fearing from the Men in Black and the all these animal rights groups. How much could I get on in a bidding war, let's say, with the big boys like China, like Saudi Arabia, like other countries and theme parks? Any ideas? What do you think the amount of money they would pay?
Well, heavens, what a question. I never looked into it, but an awful lot if you really did catch a live one. Yeah, but...
You want my opinion about it? Yeah. How about starting bidding of $1 billion? $1 billion.
I think there is a prize for a Bigfoot or convincing evidence, photographic or whatever, that's convincing everybody. There's already a prize of $several million. So it's going to be more than that.
Thank you, Mike. We appreciate the call. And, I get the point. But here's the deal. If you are to find the body, I think before you can start a bidding war, they're going to have to determine what it is that you killed. And if they are truly a form of human, you might be finding yourself in a lot more trouble than you are in a position to start making millions. Let's go to Wildcard Line 3, George in Apollo, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Brian. George Aaron, surprisingly, I'm part Seminole Seneca, grandfathered corn planter. But on my farm here in a public area with houses around, a farmer went up to do some electrical fence work, you know, over a four-day period. Went up there, I could smell what was an outhouse, but I'm 1,000 feet away, and I didn't relate anything. The next day, I'm up there, I see a large footprint in the ground. And I says, wow, what a crazy nut to be walking around up here, perfectly human standard, just like our footprint.
Yep.
The next day, I'm putting the fence in, and it's up in the evening, sun hitting it, coming out of the west. And as I hit this fence, I caught it out of my eye, and I'm on top of the hill, and it's about 10, 15 feet away from me. There's Bigfoot walking away, beautiful hair shining, same, just like, the normal, looked like an ape walking, except civet.
Yeah.
And it put a fear in me. There's one, it put a fear, just like a car dog fear, and I had to turn around and run. I got on my tractor to get away, and then I run to the tractor. I said, I'll chase this thing. But by the time I swung around, went back, it's gone.
It's gone.
Then the fourth day I went down, and I called an investigator to come up to look at it. I cast the footprint. And on the fourth day, we come up and put two trees over our farm road, sat down, was grubbing in a log, and had a PhD come out, and they looked at the footprint. The Seminole crease was there. It was on, the footprint's just like ours, though, but it's big.
Yes.
Hence the name Bigfoot, huh?
Yeah, and then we went up. The investor went up then, and we looked at the site where we saw it, and he says, you know what? There was three of them here. And he says, there's his, the mate, and there's a little one. So there was three,
yeah.
And yet it was in sight of our farmhouse and the neighbor's house, and that was the event on my farm. Now, all of them.
Yeah, well, that's I mean, a very convincing tale, similar to others that I've heard. I mean, what does one make of that, really? You saw it in good light. The only sadness is you didn't run after it and grab a handful of hair.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we did see him. Then over on my daughter's farm a year or so later, I know that in the woods where a Bigfoot walks is a large arch. It's about 6 foot. It looks like a cathedral arch.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a trail. It's about a foot you see. But anyway, I'm out there doing some haying. I had to restack this hay. Unfortunately, I bumped my knee on this event. But as I was stacking, I'm looking through the little wood section into another field, and there is a red fur standing. I thought maybe it was a deer or browse, but it wasn't. It was a red-coated, not a real red, but, you know, reddish, furish, Bigfoot, again, walking in the woods. And I couldn't do anything then. So I come up, and I told my daughter, I says, hey, do you know what I saw? I saw Bigfoot down here in the corner of the farm. In the back corner. And again, it's where people are around. See, this is around people. It isn't like out and way out in some place. So I called the boy, her boyfriend there. He said, of course, they laugh at you. But he went over to the pub. We all call it a pub for you. And here's five guys, and they're talking about the red Bigfoot. So my eyes were right. I did see it, so I happened to see it twice. How about that?
Yeah.
Excellent call, George. Thanks a lot for sharing your story with us.
Sure thing.
Well, get out there with a camera trap and a hair trap next, if it's still there.
What now? When you keep referring to a hair trap, if people are interested in doing that, What is a hair trap? How can they set a hair trap?
So get some Gorilla Tape, get some pipe insulation, and a stick. That's all you need. You put the Gorilla Tape around the pipe insulator. So this is 2 or 3 inches in diameter. Make sure the sticky side is out. Put a stick through the middle, stick it in the ground, and anything that walks by will and touches it, a hair will come out. That's all you need.
All right, let's go to wildcard line 4. Steve, Albany, New York, you're on the air with Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah, hi. Okay, I got to cut to something quick and then go on to what I was calling you about. I'm 50 miles south of the Adirondack Park where there are an awful lot of Bigfoot sightings. I'm in Albany, New York. And the reason I called is I see a lot of people with, you know, like me, who have a very long trunk and short, stubby legs, short arms. Some of them are very round. And to me, these people are what Neanderthals are supposed to have looked like. And I was always wondering, and now you say that there's DNA that might be Neanderthal in us. Have they ever tested people like this to see if they are Neanderthals? They are in their genetic pool.
Yeah,
I might have.
That's a good question. I mean, I did a lot of work on Neanderthals and human origin years ago, and I would get lots of calls saying that people were Neanderthals. It was never them, though. It was always someone else. And whenever people were checked out, they were fairly normal humans, really. So there aren't, I'm afraid, any Neanderthals walking around, at least not that have been tested. And I guess probably 1 million people have been tested now. None of them have pure Neanderthal DNA, I'm afraid.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate the call. Wildcard line 5, Jeff, Englewood, Colorado. You're on Coast to Coast AM.
Good evening, Brian and David. I am an engineer, and I'm an eyewitness to a Bigfoot sighting in Colorado here along the Platte River. The Platte River was, this was about 30 years ago. It was 1984 on Thanksgiving, and a friend of mine was with me, so he also saw it, and we had an extended look at this, what appeared to be to us like a 7-foot guy in a gorilla suit that was intentionally stamping the ground and breaking limbs as if to scare away predators or something. We had a perfect view. We were sitting on a ridge looking over a pond at a row of trees that was along a ditch, Slaughterhouse Gulch, and we saw a Sasquatch or something. You know, we were trying to convince each other that it was a guy in a gorilla suit, but that didn't work, and we were scared to death, and we sat there petrified as this thing broke through the trees and stomped on the ground and walked along this bank, and it was a good 200 meters or more that we were in eyesight contact, right? And we both sat there and just stared, and there had been a whole wave of Bigfoot sightings that year. In fact, a girl got kidnapped on Cherry Creek, which is one of the tributaries of the Platte River, and she swore that it was a Bigfoot that had abducted her and carried her over her shoulder. And there was another older girl, a teenage girl, who told a similar story. And when we went to investigate the next day, we found footprints, but they were in the snow. And the same thing at the Cherry Creek sighting. We went there the next day and we found footprints, but they were in the sand. And it had snowed and the snow was melting and the footprints were disappearing as we saw them, but they appeared to be about 14 to 16 inches. And there was another sighting, which was accompanied by UFO sightings, that was at another tributary of the Platte River, which is now Chatfield Reservoir. And there were deaths involved in that one. And then there was another sighting within a few days of that, that was at a trailer park at the Woolhurst, the previous Woolhurst Country Club, which is also along the Platte River. And this girl claimed that she was out for a walk, something was rustling through the bushes and whatever and grabbed her and threw it over her shoulder.
Yeah.
And she showed us the jacket that she was wearing, and it was covered with this really stinky, weird hair. It was not like fur. It was more like hair, but it wasn't really like hair. They were thicker than a human hair, but not as thick.
Have you still got those hairs?
No. This was almost 30 years ago now. No, I plucked a couple of the hairs off of the jacket, which it smelled really bad. It smelled like, you know, a wet bowl or whatever.
Yes, I haven't smelled it myself, but that's what they say. Well, I mean, you've actually still got the hairs.
I didn't think. I mean, we were pretty interested in it at the time because, you know, there was a missing girl, and we went to go. We were part of the search party, you know, and they had found her just as we got there. The search and rescue team had found her, and she was fine.
Well, that's good to hear. Thank you for calling in, Jeff. I'm sorry, we're up against the top of the hour. Special thanks to Brian Sykes. Check out the link for Bigfoot, Yeti, and the Last Neanderthal, a geneticist search for modern ape men. When we return, Andrew Colvin joins us as we talk about Gray Barker's Bigfoot shootout, some Mothman encounters, and other strange cryptids. That's next on the best in overnight talk radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.